So, doctor, what's the diagnosis?
Well, you're pregnant, and you got back in the corner by the woodpile.
I'm Spone Counter Guy. Thanks for stopping by. This is another edition of Trying to Herd Cats, the philosophical podcast where I throw anonymous quotes at anonymous people, and we see what kind of noises come out their mouths. And at the end of the podcast, I will reveal the source of the quotes. First quote, pride gets no pleasure out of having something, only out of having more of it than the next man. It is the comparison that makes you proud, the pleasure of being above the rest. Once the element of competition is gone, pride is gone.
I started smiling and laughing with the first line because there's such a puzzlement, I would say. This our view of, in general, of the word being, you know, being proud is so skewed, because I agree with that. That's how most people think, that pride is about, I have more, look at me, puffed up kind of experience. And unfortunately, there are folks, you know, in my practice that I work with who so often feel like they can't be proud of anything because they think that's being prideful. And so it goes back to a lot of maybe church teachings, actually, for people I work with, where they're taught, be humble. But I think having humility and being humble is wonderful. But humble doesn't mean don't feel good about your accomplishments. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to pat yourself on the back. If we don't have it, we don't have self-worth. So our word pride is difficult. It's very complex and I think often skewed.
Again, pride gets no pleasure out of having something, only out of having more of it than the next man. It is the comparison that makes you proud, the pleasure of being above the rest. Once the element of competition is gone, pride is gone.
Well, in the Bible, that's like the pride is the, to me, like the biggest sin.
Okay.
Because it leads to most of the others.
Can you give an example?
Well, like people murder for things they want. I guess, I don't know, it'd be envy.
Yeah?
I don't know if that.
So pride leads to envy, you think?
No, I mean, they're envious of something that someone has.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, but is that really realistic? The time, there'd be no, only people, I mean, people are always, you know, envious of others.
Mm-hmm.
That would only hold true if there was, if you were the last man on earth. Then there would be no competition.
Okay, like, we're friends. Mm-hmm. Do you feel there's competition between us?
No.
None whatsoever, yeah. I agree.
Right.
Maybe conceited to say, but I don't think either of us have any pride, at least with each other. Maybe.
Do you consider yourself a competitive person?
Not really. I'm the one who likes to just, like, step back and watch other people fight it out.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time I was.
Really?
Yeah, but
I can honestly say I never have been.
Yeah.
Like certain things. Yeah. I do things to win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I try to win.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get upset if I lose.
Right, yeah.
And I think something that helped me with that is when I was little, I'd be on baseball teams, mm-hmm. and we'd always lose. I always would get on the losing team. So we lost so much, it just lost. It's like, oh, so we lost. And then if we'd win something, it'd be just like
a bonus.
Well, it wouldn't affect me one way or the other. It's just like, okay, great, we won.
That might explain why we both were on a swim team together, and me and you didn't seem to care one way or the other.
No, we didn't.
And the other guys got really mad.
Yeah, and I think that's why we kind of got,
stuck on the back of the bus.
Yeah.
Literally.
I mean, I was there, I was having a good time.
Yeah.
When I went and swam, I did my best.
Yeah.
But if I lost, I didn't care. I didn't, you know, throw a fit. And that just really, that's one of the things that just really upsets me about people. I won't be around people that are really, really competitive.
Some people feel like we should have no competition whatsoever. You should play sports and not have points. Just play.
Uh-uh.
So, well, why? Based on what you just said.
I think with kids, you know, they're starting to do that now, like with littler kids. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, they'll have a soccer match or mm-hmm. something, and they won't keep score, you know, and then every kid gets a ribbon or whatever. I think that's setting them up for failure when they get older mm-hmm. because, you know, you're basically trying to tell them that you're all equal, but you're not. You know, like when you go, like for a job interview and just like, you know, these kids think, oh, I just nailed that, and you don't get it. So it's like, well, why? There needs to be competition.
So I guess what I'm hearing from you is maybe a little competition, a little pride is okay, but...
I'm not a competitive person, but I think there needs to be, you know, I think there needs to be winners and losers. I think that's a life lesson.
You take pride in your work, right?
Yes. Yeah. You know, I pride myself on, you know, doing it right. You know, especially the things I do. The things I do affect people's lives.
It seems like there's a difference then, like taking pride in something you do as opposed to being proud and arrogant.
There's doing something right, and there's arrogance saying, feeling that you're the best. These people that are, you know, like you'll see on TV, it's like, well, we called in this expert. He's an expert at, you know, whatever, X, Y, Z. Does he know everything about that? No. Mm-hmm. Does he know a lot? Yes.
I met a guy, Canadian guy, that was doing some research on Chinese tea, and he said, yeah, I'm trying to get an article published about tea, because like, then you can be counted as an expert. If you've published an article on anything, then you end up in that expert realm, and then you can get called upon to talk about it.
Right. But, is there money in that?
Yes, I think his aim was money eventually.
Again, pride gets no pleasure out of having something, only out of having more of it than the next man. It is the comparison that makes you proud, the pleasure of being above the rest. Once the element of competition is gone, pride is gone.
My first impulse is to think pride is a bad thing. But I don't think it is, because you should have pride in what you do. I think that you should care a lot about what you do and be proud of it, because I think that pushes you to do well, and I think that you should try your hardest. But maybe proud and pride are two different things to me. but pride sounds bad. So instinctively, I think that pride does get in the way of maybe the project or what you're trying to do itself, and it's just more about being the best.
Has there been a time when you were trying to be the best and it got in the way of
it? Well, I think a lot of times, like, just comparing my artwork to mm-hmm. other people on the internet, and I get really like, oh my gosh, I could do that, and then just like kind of playing with that, and then trying to and realizing that I can't do that, and then just like getting really, really upset with myself, and like feeling like I can't do anything, and having a really hard time going back to like what I do, and like, and then just getting completely so far away from remembering what it is that I do.
Is there anything, like, have you ever caught yourself being proud of something? Like, say your child, I'm sure she's mm-hmm. accomplishes a lot, and maybe you catch yourself because you're telling somebody who has a child also, but their child maybe is a bit of a loser at particular skills compared to your daughter.
I think that I care a lot about what I say to people. Yeah.
To go back to what you said before. Yeah. So you're careful not to say that stuff.
Yeah.
To somebody who has like maybe a daughter.
Yeah, if I do, like, then I would try really hard to like bring up their child too.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I care a lot about what they feel.
Okay, what about like issues of like country or sports teams or, you know, state, Tennessee versus, you know, those losers in Alabama, uh-huh. you know, kind of thing. And I know I'm being comical when I say some of that, but, you know, a lot of people do take pride of where they're from, take pride in even their race, you know, pride in their, politically, that type of thing, you know.
I think that to me is like in the proud character. Category, you know, like if I split the words, like mm-hmm. pride just immediately sounds bad, but like when you're proud of yourself mm-hmm. and proud of your country and proud of your team, mm-hmm. like I feel like that's, it just sounds prettier.
It could tie into all those things. Like you'd have to
if you can't admit like Tennessee's wrong about something, or your sports team sucks sometimes, or
I think proud is good and proud is bad. Okay.
Again, pride gets no pleasure out of having something, only out of having more of it than the next man. It is the comparison that makes you proud, the pleasure of being above the rest. Once the element of competition is gone, pride is gone.
I always find pride like in stuff that Leah does. You know, it's a great accomplishment as a parent when you don't get the note every day that says, Leah was so gentle and kind to friends. She didn't threaten to take out anybody's eyes or scratch out their noses.
Because she's gotten the notes that said that she was scratching out people's eyes.
We get 99% of the time we get the Leah was inappropriate today with her friends note. But she's very compassionate. Mm-hmm. I think there's different kinds of pride. Like, I think people have pride in, sometimes they have more pride in accomplishments rather than pride in who they are. Mm. They're not proud of who they are.
Speak of the devil.
Mommy, we're recording.
Can we like plant ball out there?
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody else about black pride or gay pride and all that.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think like, well, should I be proud of something? But I would feel weird if I try to say, oh, I'm...
Well, you cannot be Caucasian pride because then you are...
Racist?
Yeah. So you're screwed. And you can't be proud to be a man because then you're sexist.
Yeah.
And then you can't be proud of being married to a black woman, mm-hmm, because then you would be sexist, racist, and I don't know.
Showing off, probably.
Yeah, showing off. Like, ooh, look at me.
I hold my own with this black woman. In all seriousness, like, if I try to think, like, well, should I be proud of something? And I'm like, well, that feels wrong. It feels like, because it's, I guess the best I can come up with is, like, I'm not ashamed, I guess, to be what I am. But I'm more concerned about my accomplishments or the things that I've done. Some things I'm not proud of, and some things I guess I'm okay with.
I think the way that this is kind of saying it is, like, you have reached accomplishments through competitiveness. So there are people that like to put you down. I consider my accomplishments like what I've done in life, what I've been able to do by myself.
Right. Not because of where not you were born.
Yeah. And not because of who I've put down. And some people, that's the only accomplishments that you can get are through putting other people down. This comment makes me think about, like, you know, the parents who are like so proud of their kids because they're like the little league, mm-hmm, parents who are like out there and their kids are playing and they're NBA and whatever, and they're so proud of their kid because he's so competitive and he's been able to crush everybody else. Well, you know, really, that kid probably has no self-esteem, and the self-esteem that he has is connected with trophies. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the way that I think, like, a lot of people think accomplishments are through trophies. And without the trophies, they wouldn't have any accomplishments.
Yeah. Is there anything in particular that you, a pride issue that you struggle with? Sometimes where you feel good about being above somebody?
No, not really. I mean, I don't really think I'm above anybody else.
You're right. You're not.
Thank you.
Next quote. Those who have the courage to love should have the courage to suffer.
If you love somebody and you're probably going to have some suffering in there. And if you can't...
How so?
Well, you know, going through relationships, I had one where, you know, things got tough and you either love them a whole lot more or you have to let them go. Uh-huh. And sometimes it gets tougher. So you just get in that cycle. You got to love them a whole lot more. You got to let them go. Uh-huh. And...
Now, you're a single guy at the moment. When you meet new women, do you think, like, I don't want to do this again? Does that ever creep in your head a little bit?
That thought never creeps in my head, but when I meet the right person, it feels like I almost know immediately that it is the right person.
Okay, so you've met the right person before?
Yeah, once or twice. I wasn't smart enough to hold on to him.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I also did find out from a previous relationship in high school, the reason I left that person, and they came back to me several years later. We were together for a few years, and then that relationship ended over the exact same reasons it did back in high school.
So,
She cheated.
So she was the right one, but she just had this flaw of cheating.
This flaw of cheating, yeah.
Yeah, so if she didn't have that, everything would be golden.
It would have been golden, yeah.
Was that a pattern? Like, she did it to other people, too?
Well, yeah.
Dang. Wow. That's too bad. And it's too bad for her, because she'll never...
She can convince you that she's totally happy and be that way, and then all of a sudden when you...
How did you find out, if you don't mind me asking?
I got a phone call from the other person.
Oh, no.
Who was mad at me.
What? Because they thought you were the...
Yeah, they thought I was the one that she was cheating with.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that turned out to be...
Were you guys, like, into being buddies, you and this other dude, or...
Oh, no. In fact, I had to take several actions because he was kind of a stalkerish dude.
Uh-huh.
And he was trying to interfere in my personal life, and I had to... send him a message that I had contacted the police and a lawyer and recorded all his phone conversations and text and never contact me again or we'd be filing charges.
And that was the end of it?
That was the end of it. So
that's good.
Yeah, that was 2 years, and that was a hard one to let go. I mean, I was physically ill for 6 months over that. I actually ended up having heart palpitations in the hospital at one point in time.
Man, that is love.
Yeah, that was hard, but... Even though that person's still alive, I had to make the decision that that person's actually dead to me.
Yeah.
And move on with my life. And you go through a grieving process with that.
Uh-huh.
And it, you know, it takes months and sometimes years and
but
sometimes...
But it hasn't like smacked you down so hard that you wouldn't try it again if you met the right person.
It did for 6 months, but after you get time in your belt and you start to heal, it's easier. And then you... A lot of people have introduced me to a lot of folks, and I'm like, "Hi, how you doing?" Yeah, I'd never go out with this person. It's not a physical thing; it's just a mental connection. Eye contact the first time with somebody, and you can see it, you can kind of feel it in their eyes and see it in their face too.
You don't want to waste their time,
Yeah.
Again, those who have the courage to love. Should have the courage to suffer.
To love someone, especially, let's say, for an example, in a romantic relationship, and then when it becomes real, when you find out who, part of who that person really is, and you make a decision, despite knowing that this person is not perfect, to love them, that takes courage. But sometimes you may have to make a decision for that relationship to end, and you can still love that individual even though you're not together. And I think that's an example of love that hurts. Yeah, it really, you do have to let that go. And then sometimes when you let that go, that love go, sometimes it does come back to you. I haven't experienced that.
Are you waiting for me to come back?
Again, those who have the courage to love should have the courage to suffer.
I think there's a basic biblical principle behind that where Christ tells us if we're going to follow him, we're going to take up our cross daily.
Is that something that you suffered yourself already?
Absolutely. There's a lot of interpretations of what taking up your cross is.
Uh-huh.
Taking up your cross, what a lot of people believe is that it means to deny yourself. Deny yourself of what you had previously engaged in prior to your salvation. So if you're going to truly love something and have the courage to fight for it, your fight, it may be against an adversary, it may be against yourself, it may be against the flesh or desires. So if you truly love Christ and put him at the center of your life, then you're definitely going to want to fight for him and fight the temptation and anything that would try to wedge itself between you and him. One of the biggest things that I fought against started to realize and be convicted of when I first found faith is the fact that I just misrepresented myself a lot, and I've had to go almost daily just to make sure and go out of my way that everything I put forward about myself is actual and realistic, and there's just been significant life change that's come from that directly. What a lot of people don't realize, before I was saved, I always talked about how I thought, you know, marijuana and anybody that smoked it was just an idiot. Mm-hmm. I smoked pot every day for years and years and years. And
really?
I'd never let anybody know, uh-huh. ever, except for maybe a couple friends that I would smoke pot with. Uh-huh. And, you know, that was just a misrepresentation. And, you know, just people, like, including my wife. I was dating my wife for years before I got saved, and she had no idea. Uh-huh. And before I married her, you know, I was like, I'm going to lay everything out. You know, this is one of the things I engaged in that, you know, that you didn't know about, and I was dishonest with you about, mm-hmm. and was dishonest with a lot of people about. So, mm-hmm. you know, I would, it was definitely a hypocritical stance, because mm-hmm. I would, you know, just talk down so badly about people that would engage in that kind of thing, especially on a daily basis, and at the same time I was doing it myself.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
That's awful big of you to admit that. Most people wouldn't.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's the truth. So.
When you told your wife that, did she break out her bong? And
no. She is about as by the book as they come.
Okay.
She, it's funny, like, to this day, we'll be going, I don't know, somewhere through a grocery store parking lot, uh-huh. and I'll be like, oh, you smell that pot? And she's like, what's that? Like, I don't know. I smell something that smells earthy. I'm like, there you go. She's like, well, why would anybody smoke that? It smells so terrible. I'm like, yeah, I love you, honey. That's great.
Again, those who have the courage to love should have the courage to suffer.
So it's really funny you asked something like that, because I was just thinking strictly about, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, mm-hmm. to give you a little example of how that touches further than I really was thinking about now. When we lived in a certain neighborhood, you know, down in Florida, and then when Candy came along and we got married and moved to another part of town, well, our friends, I mean, my friends that I had there that I thought were the most dear friends ever, and we were great. We ran with each other all the time. Well, it was not very long at all till when you start calling up to go do something, it's just not working out, you know.
Just and, because you moved?
Well, it's you know, I was a single guy. I was like the brother,
yeah,
you know, running with them. And all of a sudden now, you know, here comes somebody else, and now he's not the same because he's, you know,
right.
And so it's not the same. And I could see that then it hurt me, you know, even though they weren't trying to be unkind to me, it's just things changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long time to figure out this is what happened.
Did they have wives, these friends?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But for some reason they wanted you by yourself and not you.
They completely saw me by myself. They always knew that all they had to do is call. He's going to run over to our place and have dinner because we got extra food tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, we'll have a party and have a good time, a nice time or whatever, hang out or go get pizza. And I never said no.
Yeah.
You know, and so that all sort of changed.
I see.
And
now you have a wife in tow.
Yeah. And so.
Candy doesn't eat that much.
And she's wonderful. No. No, she doesn't. But I mean, that's just a little bit, and it seemed like a small thing,
yeah.
But I thought we were such close, like brothers, the husbands and the, you know, and the wives loved me. I didn't think about the impact until later, and I can see it better now. And we see each other in passing, we're just like nothing ever happened, say hello,
right.
But it just doesn't work out.
And last quote, surround yourself with the best people you can find, delegate authority, and don't interfere as long as the policy you've decided upon is being carried out.
Being a boss, it's not like you need to approve to someone like you are stronger, you are smarter, you are everything better than the next person. I believe that's not a real leader or a boss.
Do you know people who are that way, that are bossy, that they have to be the smartest person in the room?
Or yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah, I have friends like that, and I see them in their house, but I don't want to interfere.
Of course, but how can you give an example of how being bossy or controlling is hurting them?
The people around you would not like you a lot.
What if they don't want to be liked? They just want to be the boss.
I mean, then that's their choice, but that they were not going to be surrounded with the good people. Like, even if I'm a good person, if someone is pushing me so hard to be a bossy, even if I want to be a friend or a good, nice to him from what he's doing or she is doing, that is going to reflect on my behaviors. I'm not going to be nice to him or her.
Okay.
So they're not going to be around nice people.
They won't attract nice people is what you're saying. They'll only attract other mean people or desperate people.
I would say desperate people or people who have no other choice.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that would explain some companies or businesses when all the employees stink. And
yeah, I mean, that's what I'm getting my master's right now in engineering management. It's all about managing people.
There you go.
Yeah.
You would know all about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, surround yourself with the best people you can find. Delegate authority and don't interfere as long as the policy you've decided upon is being carried out.
That makes sense.
Is that how you run your business?
Yeah, for sure. And the thing is like the people you surround yourself with, they're not going to do it the way you want it done. Well, I mean the way you would have done it. And you have to be okay with that. That's hard for a lot of people. Oh. I've seen that. And it's been discussed a lot in a lot of business magazines. And that's where you do the, you know, micromanaging and then people, they just get upset too. You know, they feel unfulfilled because, well, they should be, you know, I guess you spend a lot of time hiring the right people. That's the most important thing, I think.
In your business, have you seen, you know, like the young whippersnapper, so to speak, and they think they know how to do everything. And you're like, do you ever say like, do you ever let them do it the way they want to, even though they may fail, or are you sometimes surprised that they do actually know a different way to do this same thing?
Well, sometimes you let them fail so you can get rid of them. No, I'm not joking. You know, but, you know, it's a learning experience. But you want them to fail, and you want them to fail. Like, the trend now is fail quickly, fail often, fail quickly, and get it out of the way, you know, so that you can move on. It's just the same adage of Edison, you know, he never failed making a light bulb. He just, you know, ticked off the list what other elements wouldn't work.
Again, surround yourself with the best people you can find, delegate authority, and don't interfere as long as the policy you've decided upon is being carried out.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Can you give an example of firsthand knowledge of that?
A company I used to work for, the guy, the president, he surrounded himself with quality people and let them do their thing, and he was highly successful. Mm-hmm. And over the years, as time went away, he was kind of a control freak. Then he kind of drove those people away over the years.
So something changed in him.
Yeah, something changed in him and his mindset. And within a course of about 4 years, the people that he had brought in and trusted to run the different branches and divisions of the company had left because of his controlling mannerisms. And within 4 years, the business was bankrupt and gone.
So he replaced those people that were competent with people that were incompetent in a way?
Yeah, he started bringing in people that would just take the job. Just do what he said.
Yeah.
And there are people out there that want to be mind-numb robots that can handle that kind of work. But
and that's so funny you say that. I was having a conversation recently with somebody else about, you know, Hitler and Stalin had a lot in common. You know, they both loved to be in charge. They both had a thing for genocide. They both were paranoid. There were sneaky Jews all over the place trying to undermine them. But but one thing they were different on is in Hitler's camp, if you were competent and intelligent and, you know, innovative, unless you were a Jew, of course, you got promoted, and you know, he surrounded himself by pretty apt people. But Stalin was the opposite. If you knew a little bit more than him, eventually you ended up in the Gulag or Siberia, if your brain was a little bigger than his, you'd find a bullet in it pretty soon.
Well, you could see that in Hitler's case, because towards the end, his own people tried to kill him.
Yeah.
They knew it was better. Yeah. It was better without him.
Yeah, there you go.
They were smarter than he was.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier you had been in charge of stuff. Did you try to bring on other app people, did you ever have that opportunity?
Never really had the opportunity because they were always positions of appointment. So the board would appoint people, or you would, you know, find yourself in a committee with people you never met before.
Uh-huh.
And I'll say I was always a better sergeant than an officer because I always worked better behind the scenes without. It's better to ask forgiveness and seek approval sometimes.
All right. Did ever, when you were behind the scenes like that, obviously sometimes you don't get the credit.
That never bothered me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think anybody benefited from the work you were doing behind the scenes?
Oh, yeah. There were a couple of instances at our church. We had a big ice storm here a few years ago. Uh-huh. And the church cemetery was a total wreck. There were tree limbs down everywhere. Uh-huh. And they were kept having meetings about, you know, who we're going to hire to clean this up, because it was an elderly church. So I went up there one day with a chainsaw and just started dragging limbs. And over a course of about a week, uh-huh. they came in the next Sunday and the cemetery was cleaned up and they hadn't decided on what they were going to do yet. And they're like, oh, wow, somebody cleaned up the cemetery while we're trying to debate over how we're going to get this done. It just got done. So.
And no one ever knew it was you?
No, they finally figured it out, but I didn't want to take any credit for it. It didn't matter to me. I saw something need to be done.
Right.
You know, I could sit on a committee and argue with people about prices and contracts about getting this done, or just go out there and do it.
Yeah.
And another one, they had a donation of some banners to the church. Uh-huh. And they had them dry cleaned, and people are like, where are we going to put them? Well, I don't know. And nothing has been inside this chapel in 80 years. Uh-huh. So one day, Sunday after church, I knew where they had the key, so I went there with my ladder. And I hung these banners in nice little places around the church. People come in Sunday, they're like, that's great. Who did that? I didn't say a word at that point.
Well, good. You know, it's funny that we go into all the power and delegation, and you kind of, you basically had, talk about Obama, you had some executive orders there, buddy. Yeah.
Again, surround yourself with the best people you can find, delegate authority, and don't interfere as long as the policy you've decided upon is being carried out.
Pretty much what I try to do. You know, you're always held within the confines of, especially in retail management, the quality of people you can get for the pay that you're offering. But actually, right now, I'm in a pretty decent spot, but there's been times where I would rather wait for the right person, whether it mean working 60 hours myself to hold that off, instead of bringing somebody like a body in just to fill a spot.
Mm-hmm. What are some mistakes that you feel you've made? Because I mean, I feel like I like to hear people's mistakes, because it makes me feel superior. No, I'm kidding. It just because that's how you learn.
I guess being overly idealistic into what people can accomplish when it's completely outside of their own talents. You know, it's one thing, and that's one thing I've learned from, and that's why I try to focus on now. Like for a long time, I took my position, and it's what I did for a long time, is I would try to bring somebody in and build them up through the ranks and prepare them to, you know, take over their own store, to advance in the company. But in doing so, when you're hiring people that you can shape and mold into leaders, and you work in a, you know, fairly high pressure sales environment, you're not always hiring salespeople. So, you know, for a while I had all these people that I'm pouring into and teaching and trying to mold into leaders. And at the same time, my sales are plummeting because these people can't sell to save their lives, but they can lead a team of people that can sell. So, you know, and then I ended up having to do a complete 180 because the sales had gotten so bad after I had taken the most recent acquisition and moved him on to another managerial role. I brought in, you know, what the company wanted me to do is bring in rainmakers, people that can just talk to anybody and sell anything. And, you know, so I'm bringing them into sell, and at the same time, I'm trying to keep the same mindset, you know, as leadership, and basically trying to build teams around each other so that they're kind of coexisting, and each person having an area of leadership in the store, whether it be over, you know, fixing, you know, we do phone repair, we have fixing phones and tablets, having one person in charge of merchandising, one person in charge of, you know, stocking and just making sure things are in their designated spot, merchandising. And then you kind of let loose and you see that all these people have their own individual leadership roles and areas, and you don't really have a hierarchy outside of yourself when there should have been. And it's kind of like Lord of the Flies all of a sudden. So it's, you know, it's, those were a couple mistakes that I've tried to learn from, and it's weird trying to find a balance.
You've had like tribal wars inside the battery store.
Yeah, I literally at one point had a guy calling me sobbing on the phone because the other guy was being too harsh on him. And at the same time I'm talking to this guy, I get a beep on my phone, and it's the other guy who was called to tell me that the first guy won't listen to anything he's saying, and he can't work with him. Uh-huh. And I'm trying to cut my grass, and I just could care less at this point.
You're at home.
Yeah, I'm at home. And they were working in the store that day, and you know, it's, wow. And they were both threatening to walk out, and I'm just like, come on, guys. He closed in an hour. Just find a way. Just don't talk to each other. You know, it's like, I'll fix it tomorrow.
In the source of the quotes, pride gets no pleasure out of having something, only out of having more of it than the next man. It is the comparison that makes you proud, the pleasure of being above the rest. Once the element of competition is gone, pride is gone. It's by Clive Staples Lewis, better known as C.S. Lewis, a 20th century Oxford scholar who wore a multitude of intellectual hats, though these days he's remembered best for his writings, including Surprised by Joy, The Chronicles of Narnia, Mere Christianity, and countless more. Next quote, "Those who have the courage to love should have the courage to suffer," is by Anthony Trollope, also an Oxford man, though from the century before Lewis, and is best known for his series of writings centering around the mythical county of Barsetshire. And last quote, "Surround yourself with the best people you can find, delegate authority, and don't interfere as long as the policy you've decided upon is being carried out," was said by Ronald Wilson Reagan, a man whose career resume included lifeguard, sportscaster, actor, union leader, California governor, and eventually U.S. president. In the Corner, Back by the Woodpile podcast is produced by A Closet, A Pocket, and A Suitcase. You can email us at spuncounterguy@hotmail.com. And you can find us on Twitter as spuncounterguy. And a special thanks to thebrofisticate.com.